sound will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. It is Saturday, the 10th of January, in the glorious future year of 2026, a year which is off to a marvelous start. First things first, I wish you to be aware that as a citizen of the United States, I unequivocally condemn the action of the United States military and the United States government's executive branch in bombarding the city of Caracas, Venezuela, and abducting Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and bringing him to the United States for a show trial on trumped-up charges which the people bringing them don't even care about. This is a crime against peace. It is an absolutely exceptional and abnormal act, which no one should for a moment tolerate or condone. And I certainly do not. Asked to justify the action, incidentally, White House advisor Stephen Miller quoted Lord Voldemort from the Harry Potter books, saying, "There's no right or wrong, there is only power in those who have the strength to use it." I don't know if he's paying J.K. Rowling royalties for that. This is, of course, sort of the shtick of the guy in the White House at the moment. He is, how do I put it? I would call him Nietzsche's Superman as fast food mascot. His public image. Now, be sure, this is not really a particularly good impression of the man himself, but his public image is that of someone who acts without constraint. He doesn't pay attention to the opinion of others. He doesn't even bother to stop to think. He simply acts according to his whims. This is, I should point out, not what either Nietzsche or Aleister Crowley meant by will, but it is very much in resemblance of an uneducated person's notion of the concept. So yes, Nietzsche's Superman as fast food mascot. That's who's in charge in the United States today. And as I say, speaking entirely for myself as a citizen of the United States, I do not give these things in the shape of men license to speak for me or to act in my name. And my fellow Americans would be better served to refuse that license. Now, to give you an idea, it was not unheard of in the late 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, before the League of Nations and the United Nations, it was not entirely unheard of when a small country owed, well, usually a small country, sometimes a large but backward country, owed foreign debts and refused to pay them, that warships from one of the major powers might show up in their major ports, threaten to bombard, very, very rarely actually do it, and then collect the customs revenues of the country in question until their debts were being paid in a more regular manner. But firstly, this was always an exceptional practice, which was usually not enacted because of pressure from the other great powers, or if it did start, was usually abandoned fairly soon as a result of pressure from the other great powers, and typically only happened, again, where the country had foreign debts which its customs revenues were explicitly pledged for. It was not something you could just go and do. And so the United States claiming that the United States is going to run Venezuela, or even is going to monopolize Venezuela's oil revenue for the foreseeable future, is absolutely exceptional, even without the United Nations, right, even without the solemn pledge of the United States in the Charter of the United Nations, not merely not to commit aggression, but to act against those who do commit aggression, this would be exceptional. It wouldn't be unacceptable. You would not get any kind of social license from the other great powers for doing it. But the United States, at the moment, is pretending to be the only power whose opinion matters, which is a very dangerous pretense. Now, I should make it clear that there are a lot of people in Venezuela who are not upset to see the back of Maduro, that they really don't want him back in many cases. The situation is a little complex, but let me lay out the bare details for you. That when Hugo Chavez and his so-called Bolivarian socialists came to power in the late 1990s, one of the things that they did was to purge people they considered politically unreliable from the oil industry, with the result that the oil industry has in Venezuela has become less and less productive over the years. At the same time, the Bolivarian socialists did not do much in the way of reinvestment of oil revenue. The situation in Venezuela up to that time had been essentially that a few fairly wealthy people had received the bulk of the oil revenue and then distributed it to their hangers-on as patronage. And there was not a lot of industry, there's not even a lot of agriculture, surprisingly enough, in the country. It was effectively a single-crop, export-oriented economy. And they bought whatever they needed, you know, newsprint, eggs and milk even, using that oil revenue. Well, that's not a particularly good situation to be in. And what the Bolivarian socialists did was simply change how the revenue was distributed. Instead of going to a few people and then being distributed as patronage, it was now being distributed as a government dole, which is slightly better for the common people, but not a lot better. There was no reinvestment of the oil revenue into other kinds of industries. And that is the great problem. Because again, the revenue, the productivity of Venezuela's oil fields has been declining for years. It's also true that the oil Venezuela produces is mostly of a kind which is not terribly valuable in the world market. Matter of fact, a great deal of it consists of a substance so heavy and tarry that OPEC doesn't actually allow them to call it oil. So, that is the situation in Venezuela. And there has been greater and greater unrest. There has been greater and greater rejection of the Chavista government over the years. And at least the most recent federal election, and probably the one after that, before that, but everyone agrees that the most recent federal election was carried for the Bolivarian socialists with Nicolas Maduro at their head by outright and blatant fraud. That Maduro is quite illegitimate and his party illegitimate with him. The people in Venezuela are being kept under control by a sort of armed paramilitaries, gangs, known as colectivos, who essentially, they get their, you know, they get a bigger portion of the oil money than the common man. But, of course, the currency, Venezuelan Bolivar, was once one of the soundest currencies in Latin America. It has become very depreciated. So, one wonders how much longer the loyalty of these colectivos can be held. But again, this is entirely separate from the question, right? The people in Venezuela might be happy to see the back of Maduro. They're certainly not happy to see Caracas bombarded. And they are certainly not happy to have the United States threatening to, quote, run their country or to embargo them and seize their outgoing oil and sell it for the benefit of the United States or any of these other incredible and idiotic things we are hearing from the criminals and terrorists who are now operating the U.S. executive branch and the U.S. military. But, of course, Vladimir Putin could not bear to be upstaged. He's got to be back in the spotlight as the worst person in the world. And so, he went and did something amazing. He used ballistic missiles against the Ukrainian city of Lviv, or Lviv, which is in the western part of Ukraine, up near the Polish border, and far enough into the country that Russian conventional military forces, Russian air forces, and so on, are not able to attack it. And so instead, Putin ordered intermediate-range ballistic missiles used against the city. This is not the first time, but it's still quite exceptional. Now, you must understand that there were no warheads on these missiles. There isn't any point. The damage done in Britain by the, and also in Rotterdam, by the, and Antwerp, by the V-2s, during the Second World War, it was discovered that the impact damage of the falling missile was about equal to the explosive yield of the one-ton Amatol high-explosive warhead. So just the weight of the thing falling in at that speed was equivalent to about a ton and a half of TNT. And so these intermediate-range ballistic missiles, which have been fired against Lviv, they just have weights, no explosive warhead. These were, of course, originally in... This is... They don't do a lot of damage, okay? I mean, they're destructive, but not immensely so. Because, of course, these were missiles originally designed to deliver thermonuclear warheads, in which case one warhead of a few hundred kilograms in mass could obliterate a large city. So Putin is spending money like water in order to intimidate and terrify the people of Lviv and western Ukraine, because these intermediate-range ballistic missiles are immensely costly. In fact, so far as one can tell, the only reason that this is possible, feasible at all, is simply that these IRBMs are cut down from decommissioned and superannuated intercontinental ballistic missiles, that they're effectively getting rid of old stock. But it's quite terrifying to watch the video of these warheads incoming. And of course, I'm certain that it's far more terrifying to be in Lviv, because, of course, the message Putin is sending with each shot is, one of those could have been a city killer. So, yes, Vladimir Putin is desperate to retain his position as the worst person in the world. He will do anything. And he has had a job of work grabbing it back this week. What else do I have to talk about today? Well, you'll be glad to know I went to the printers and I got the 1,000 printed offset printed jackets for Blast 1 and 2. There's actually a little more than 1,000 of number 2 and a little less than 1,000 of number 1, but printed with the, as I discussed previously, offset printed jackets. I now need to get my laser printer back in working order so I can actually fill those jackets, but they're printed and folded. Now, they didn't come out quite as I would hope, only in the sense that the back cover color underprint is a little heavier, so it's a little harder to read the black text through it than I would have hoped. But overall, they look good. So I'm happy for that. What else is there to say? Well, so I just got back last night from a quick trip to Kansas. I took the Heartland Flyer, which is a train that originates in Fort Worth and terminates in Oklahoma City. And then when I got to Oklahoma City, I got on a connecting bus, which took me to a tiny little middle of nowhere place called Wellington, Kansas. Which is where I got picked up. Then I stayed over and then came back yesterday. And driving down, now this is quite interesting, driving down through Oklahoma, right? So most of it was Oklahoma. What can I say about it? So on the south side of Ponca City, Oklahoma, there is a business. The south side of Ponca City, Oklahoma is the works of the Continental Carbon Company. And if you go and you look on Google Maps or something like anything that'll give you an aerial photo, you'll discover it is just a black blotch. The whole area is solid black. The Continental Carbon Company manufactures carbon black from, looks like, to me, like residual oil, though it could be anything really, from the nearby petroleum refineries. Anyway, the whole place is just carbon black all over. So yeah, an aerial photograph of it is just a black spot. So that's what you call carbon pollution, right? That, you know, people usually, when they say carbon pollution, what they mean is carbon dioxide emissions into the atmosphere. But this is literal carbon pollution. The whole area is just coated in a thin layer of light-absorbing, finely divided elemental carbon. So that was an interesting thing to see, for sure. In Cowley County, Kansas, I mentioned in a previous show that in Cowley County, Kansas, there were people up in arms about a proposed battery storage facility to be constructed near the electrical substation, which is just west of Oxford, Kansas, which is on U.S. Highway 160 east of Interstate 35. Again, if you want to look at it on maps or aerial photography or something. Anyway, well, there is a proposal to build a 345 kilovolt electrical transmission line from a place further north in Kansas down into Oklahoma to reinforce the electrical grid. And landowners in Cowley County got up in arms about it, and they went to the county commissioners meeting and got the county commissioners to vote against a permit for it. Which is going to lead me to write a letter to the editor of the newspaper, the Courier-Traveler, which is the paper of record in Cowley County, to say, look, in pretty much so many words, if the landowners of Cowley County, Kansas, want to profit by wind turbines, which are much more obtrusive and with their colossal footings do much more damage to the soil than electric power transmission lines, They must accept the things that go along with them. Everybody knows, all experts agree, that if you're going to have lots of wind machines in your power system, the resulting grid instability means that you need A, more tie lines, and B, battery storage facilities or something similar. And so for the landowners of Cowley County who want to profit by these wind turbines, to then reject the things that must go along with them, the necessary ancillaries of those wind turbines, is absurd and nonsensical. It's like going to a restaurant, ordering a meal, and refusing the plate and the cutlery. So, that's a, that's what I have to say about Cowley County, Kansas, just right at the moment. Again, I do plan to write that as a letter to the editor, but a little more cleaned up. Now, what more do I have to say? Ah, yes. So, in Japan, the... What will I say about this? The slow process of getting the country's newer nuclear power plants restarted. Only the newer ones. The older ones have all been written off. The process has been impeded by the discovery that the Chubu Electric Power Company has been reporting false seismic data about their Hamaoka nuclear power plant to the regulator. Don't lie to your regulators, folks. Don't lie to your regulator. They need correct information to make decisions on. Bob Jockman asks, any commentary about the possible glut of Venezuelan oil in the USA? Well, as I said above, much of what Venezuela has to sell, OPEC doesn't even allow them to call oil because it is so heavy and tarry. There is some refining capacity for this in the United States, particularly on the U.S. Gulf Coast, which is why there was a desire to run a pipeline which would carry the bitumen from the Canadian oil mines up in Alberta down to the U.S. Gulf Coast, because it's a very similar substance. Now, the thing is, of course, there have been a lot of objections and protests to the shipment of Canadian oil down to those refineries. Well, moving that oil to U.S. Gulf Coast refineries by tanker doesn't require any pipelines that people might protest against. So in that sense, I suppose it would be good for the folks on the U.S. Gulf Coast and the refineries. I don't know that it'll have that much effect on Canadian exports because, again, the amount of material being moved from Canada down to the U.S. Gulf Coast has been limited by lack of transport capacity. And, again, people tell you, Venezuela has enormous oil reserves. Yes, and much of those reserves, I mean, they're located in inconvenient places, mountainous areas, jungly areas. There's a lot of them that makes the Canadian product from the oil mines of Athabasca look like West Texas Intermediate. I mean, Venezuela has large oil sands deposits. Again, nobody in the world right now wants to put any money into new mining projects for that kind of stuff. I have mentioned before, by the way, that the anomalous situation in Western Canada, where the price of fossil gas is really, really low is owing to the fact that basically gas wells in Alberta are being, and Saskatchewan, are being operated for what's called condensate, the light liquids that fall out when you pump out natural gas. Because that condensate makes the ideal diluent that you can blend with the product from the Athabascan oil mines to get it to flow better in a pipeline, so-called diluted bitumen or dilbit, as Bob Junkman correctly says. And if you're going to ship it to the Irving Brothers refinery in Atlantic Canada, which is one of the few places that actually wants to handle this material, it really helps to thin it out a bit. But, again, anybody who wants my stickers that say "No blood for oil, atoms for peace" is welcome to some. That we do not need to be doing this, right? That the use of fossil fuels to supply such a large proportion of the world's energy needs is really quite obsolete, has been for a long time. We need to face up to the fact, right? We need to face up to the fact, as was pointed out many times back in the 1970s even, sometimes even before that by particularly prescient thinkers, that the proliferation of nuclear power plants is not likely to cause proliferation of nuclear weapons and is not likely to lead to nuclear war. The continued use of hydrocarbons, a wasting resource to support the bulk of the world's energy needs, that is likely to lead to trouble. And given that the only country which has ever used nuclear bombs in warfare, cross your fingers that it stays that way, we don't see another one anytime soon. The only time nuclear weapons have ever been used in a war, the country which used them did not have nuclear power plants. No one had yet worked out how to extract useful energy from the chain reaction, right? You can build an atom bomb without having nuclear power. And if you're fighting over oil, gas, coal, why, you might end up using that. But you know what you might also see? What's much cheaper and easier to make clandestinely than nuclear weapons? Chemical and biological weapons. VX gas. You know, if Japanese cultists could make VX gas back in the 90s, pretty much anybody can make it today. Biological weapons? Maybe. Biological warfare has always proven to be a very questionable thing to engage in, just in practical terms. Aside from being a very, very bad idea. But yeah, so again, the United States, which currently produces more hydrocarbons than it consumes, has no reason to be destabilizing the world in this way, even from the most purely pragmatic realpolitik point of view, with no consideration of morality or any sort of common sense. The United States has the wherewithal to help the entire world move away from hydrocarbons, with 80,000 tons of stored nuclear fuel containing 800 tons of plutonium. Anyway, send your cards and letters to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas, 76101, United States of America. And if you appreciate these broadcasts, you can support them. Patreon.com/man_and_atom for a one-time contribution, paypal.me/prometheuslives. Coming up next is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Thanks for listening.